Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, we shop for new gaming headsets, and we take a look at the oldest and the newest keyboards here in the Hardware Asylum Labs. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain. When Darren and I sat down to talk about recording the podcast, I was reminded that I wanted to do some upgrades to the podcast gear.
Yeah.
Get a new audio interface and some new headphones. And as we were sitting down talking about what headphone to buy, you know, it was like Behr Dynamic or Sennheiser or get another set of Pioneers or, you know, Krako Backyard Specials or something. Darren got sad.
I did. And Dennis, it's because I've had a tragedy, a death in the family.
Oh my gosh. Not a real death in the family, right?
Well, not literally, but yeah. As a hardware enthusiast, I think we all have certain pieces of hardware that we grow attached to.
Yeah, and they become our favorites.
They do, and sometimes they linger, and sometimes they stay on a shelf, like some of your classic motherboards, for example.
Oh, I still am.
But we talk about those a lot. But for me, and longtime listeners will know, I've always been a huge Sennheiser fan. Mm-hmm. And a large part of that legacy is my gaming headset.
Ah, the gaming headset. Now, okay. If I remember, the Sennheiser brand, it started out Sennheiser, they're high-end audiophile style headphones. And then people were saying, you know, I do a lot of gaming, so I need a microphone. And then they said, okay, sure, we'll add a microphone.
So way back when I had a pair of Sennheisers, I want to say they were 600s. Although it's been so long. Mm-hmm. And I had been using gaming headphones like most folks out there. You know, you buy your Turtle Beaches or your Corsair Gaming or whatever your favorite brand is, the Astras, for example, right, are really popular now.
I have some creative ones that I still use.
And they're good mm-hmm. enough probably for 90% of the world out there.
Oh, yeah.
Good. But as a audiophile, mm-hmm. I found that when I wasn't gaming, they were inadequate. And so initially I solved that problem by buying a pair of Sennheiser headphones mm-hmm. and using those as my non-gaming headphones. And then you find yourself in a difficult position where you're swapping back and forth those stupid little plugs or buy an external DAX, which is where I ended up. And all that sort of came to a head when I decided this is stupid. Sennheiser makes a gaming headset, mm-hmm. and so I bought one. And back in the day, it was probably the equivalent of about $250 today, so it was a significant upgrade from those typical Best Buy-level gaming headsets.
Right.
And so it was a hard decision to make, but I bought a pair of Sennheiser Gaming PC-373D okay. headsets. And these headsets came out way back when... 2016, summer 2016.
Yeah, so that's like almost 10 years ago as of this recording.
Yeah, and so I bought these things and immediately noticed a difference. Mm-hmm. They were very similar in their sound signature to my beloved 600s. Yep. And I've had a lot of Sennheisers since then. But I still hold on to my 600s and my 6XXs and my Sennheisers gaming headphones. And other headphones have come and gone because... they've been too expensive or there wasn't enough difference in the sound signature to justify the cost. So I can say with strong confidence, Dennis, mm-hmm. as an audiophile, if you don't have an unlimited budget, the Sennheiser 600 series headphones are the sweet spot.
Okay. You said that these died.
Did so they broke.
Did they explode? Like, oh, did you burn your ears or something? Or?
So I wear these headphones every day. And I pull them on and off as I'm working or gaming or video conferencing or whatever. And yes, I have other solutions that I mix with them when I don't want to wear the headphones. So I bought these way back when. And a couple of years in, I bought upgraded ear pads for them because I wanted nicer ear pads. So I bought mm-hmm. some Dakani head pads and I bought a couple of different sets and I ended up settling on some Velour. So you invest in some new pads.
Yeah.
And then
after like 4 years, you got to replace
them. Yeah. And then I bought upgraded cables because you can. And, you know, one of the reasons that you buy good headphones is because if the cable gets mangled or you need a longer one or a shorter one, you can buy an aftermarket cable.
Yeah.
And
does he use the mini XLR?
I have a mini XLR, but I don't use that because, as you know, right now I'm using as my daily driver the newest version of the external DAC from Creative Labs.
Right. Well, I mean, on the Sennheisers, though, is it a 3.5-inch banana plug or is it a mini XLR?
So it uses a 3.25, but it's a proprietary plug shape.
Oh, okay.
So you have to buy a Sennheiser cable on the aftermarket. And I don't know if that's true of all their headsets.
Yeah.
But it is of all the ones that I've bought cables for.
Yeah, like the, well, for instance, the digressing here, on my Pioneers, if I can get this off, it's got the three holes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so that's the mini XLR.
Right. I have my Hi-Fi ones have that also, but no, it doesn't. But they do use the LNR on them. For the audiophile style.
Right.
But anyway, I digress. So I've had these things since they first came out in 2016 and use them constantly, the on off. Mm-hmm. And have only replaced the ear pads twice, actually, in 10 years.
That's not bad.
And both times it's just because they were flake and they would probably still be very usable. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you have the means, right, you buy new ones. So long story short, I went this week to put them on while I was taking a break from work to play a little Battlefield. Shocker.
Oh, yeah.
And as I went to put them on, the headband, which is metal, finally snapped from all that on-off flexing. Mm-hmm. Right above the Y that holds the ear cup. Snapped.
Oh.
And I know, I really could probably figure out some way to repair them and continue to use them, but because you can, I went shopping.
Oh. Well, and it's too bad I don't have the TIG welder here because we could just and put it back together for you.
Well, and ironically, I find myself reluctant to get rid of them because they've been so good to me. I'm like, well, maybe I could figure out some way to repair them. But
it would be like that guy in school that always tapes up his glasses because parents don't want to replace them, right? Yeah.
Well, no one really sees them normally, right? Because you can pull out the, you know, the RS headphones or whatever for... you know, land parties.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I have a lot of headphones.
Yeah. I have motherboards. Dan has headphones.
So of course, what do? You go into the closet and you try to find a good replacement with a built-in mic. Mm-hmm. And I thought about pulling out the audiophile headphones and sticking that old Antlion back on them and using it in the short run.
The Antlion? What's that?
Oh yeah. So when I first was shopping, I already had Sennheiser audiophile headphones and a couple other pairs from Hi-Fi Mon and the like.
Yeah.
So one of the solutions that a lot of folks like, if you consider yourself an audiophile, is you buy a add-on mic. And Antlion is the brand that I most often recommend. They have both wired and wireless models today. Mm-hmm. So if you have a good audiophile headset that you want to use for gaming instead of buying a substandard model, then you buy a Modify, and what it does is it uses a sticky pad to stick on one of your ear pads, and it's a boom mic.
Oh,
and it has its own volume control, and you just run it down your line and plug it into your mic, and then you can use any amp, DAC, headphone combination with your mic. Or, you know, you can do like we do for the podcast and buy yourself a boom mic or a desktop mic.
Oh, yeah, and an audio interface and then some special software.
Yeah, and so I had a Yeti unit that I tried, and I tried my Sennheisers, my Antlion, and a couple of other headphones that I had laying around, and I found that running that second cable was substandard. And
it gets in the way.
And having a desktop mic took away the desk space that I need for, you know, things like paperwork related to work or, you know, extra testing bed for, you know, hardware testing. So it was just too much hardware. Mm-hmm. So I went shopping in my closet and I pulled out the RS headphones, and you know, we'll link you to the review below. And they are probably the best gaming headphones that you can buy that aren't audiophile.
Oh yeah. I mean, I remember you really liked them.
They're great. But you know, you have the problem that I had from the get-go. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic for gaming, but they're only average for listening to FLAX and my music. Mm-hmm. So I went shopping again. I'm like, well, I'll just buy another Sennheiser 37 or 7-3-D and blah, blah, blah. They don't even make them anymore. And so I cried a little bit. And it turns out that Sennheiser sold off their gaming division. Well, initially they partnered with a company called EPOS, E-P-O-S.
Yeah. I think we met with them at CES mm-hmm. 1 year. And they were like really proud, almost too proud to actually talk to anybody. It was crazy.
Because they were started making the Sennheiser game, and it was Sennheiser EPOS, I hope that's how you pronounce it, EPOS, yeah. EPOS maybe, headphones. And they did this for, I don't even think a year. And then Sony was like, all right, you're good to go, and spun it off or sold it. I'm not even sure what. Mm. So Sennheiser is no longer involved with the EPOS brand. Although they will claim very proudly that these are Sennheiser engineering in those headphones.
Yeah. Well, they might still be dedicating drivers to them, I guess.
And it's likely. If nothing else, they use the same design. So I bought an EPOS Game 1 headset, which is their...
The Game 1.
The Game 1 headset from EPOS. And I tried to use it.
I'm going to look that up.
And it was pretty good, but it was not as good.
EPOS O-N-E.
Yeah, headset. Gaming headset. And so as a member of Mastrop, I remember when these first came out.
Oh, those.
And it looks exactly like my headset. And if you read the marketing speak, it sounds very close. Very close.
But it's not the same price. I mm-hmm. think that's the dead giveaway.
Yeah, and so if you are a longtime Sennheiser fan, you know that they have their different series. And much like a lot of modern sports cars, right, the smaller numbers are cheaper mm-hmm. and the bigger numbers get better. We talk about this with Beyer Dynamic headphones, for example. Beyer headphones, the bigger number indicates the better headset. And so if you're looking at a pair of Beyer Dynamic headphones, mm-hmm. the gaming headsets have advanced now, and they're in the 300 series. I think we initially reviewed...
Yeah, it was like a 300 MX was the mm-hmm. first edition that they released. And
so we've reviewed the wireless 300 MX and mm-hmm. a headset that we probably should have held on to, but at the time I didn't need them.
Yeah.
And now they have their newer 300 Rs, the Tiger, I think is what you're looking at.
Yeah.
Which are probably pretty good. But to get the 300s, the new 300s, they're very expensive from Beyer.
It's like $600, I think.
So I wasn't really ready to spend that much money because, as we've talked about a lot, I'm always looking for the best bang for your buck in computer gaming. But what I discovered is that since Drop had started selling those EPOS branded headphones, mm-hmm. if we've talked about Drop before, but I'll segue real quick. Drop is a website. It used to be called Mass Drop, where they gather a bunch of orders and then they make a group buy for a specific type of product. And they do a lot of gaming hardware, keyboards, that sort of stuff. So if you haven't checked out drop.com, I'd highly recommend it. Although I will warn you that it requires registration.
And they're owned by Corsair now.
What?
Yeah. Corsair bought Drop.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, but I hope they last because Drop is really a great source of headsets and gaming hardware, and they do a lot of one-offs. Mm-hmm. So they had done a EPOS headset, but I discovered, much to my excitement, that they did a one-off update of my headphones called the PC38X. Now, when you see Drop headphones that were designed with Sennheiser, they always end up with an X. So instead of being PC380s, they're 38Xs.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. And I pulled those up on Mass Drop. And they actually look a lot like your old set.
They because they're practically identical. All mm-hmm. they really did was update the hardware that was inside of them to whatever the latest 600 series is that they were aping that year. We could look, but I think they're 650s.
Yeah.
Instead of the 600s, and audiophiles will be able to tell you the differences. But I was ecstatic, and the price point was great, $200. So not as expensive as the Beyers.
And you get a Discord Nitro subscription with it.
Yeah, pretty terrific.
Yeah.
Great headphones. And when I put them on, my friends on Discord said, oh, finally you sound normal again. When I listened to my music, it sounded fantastic. And I don't want to disrespect the RS headset because it really is phenomenal. The positioning is great, especially when you pair it with that Creative Labs external DAC.
Yeah. Well, and the thing with audio, just in general, is that as an audiophile, you and I both, I think we fall into that category. We can usually tell the difference of X versus Y versus G and P and stuff like that.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But the thing that some people don't realize is that if you, you know, if you have a cheap set of headphones, right, and you're listening to music and gaming all the time, eventually you are going to get in tune with what that sounds like.
Yeah, it becomes your normal.
Yeah, and then if you change headsets, you know, if you change from a like a cheap gaming headset to an audiophile headset, the levels are completely different, and it will sound almost bad to you.
Oh, yeah.
Just because you're accustomed to a different style of sound. Now, if you are on the other spectrum of that, and then you start messing around with other sets of headphones or even just speakers in general, you can usually tell the deficiencies of like, oh, well, the highs are bad here and there's absolutely no mid-range. And it's like, well, what does that mean? And it's like, well, it's this these frequencies here. And you can usually point it out. But most people aren't going to understand that or even realize that something is missing.
Well, that's very true. And I find that when I review headphones, which I do fairly regularly, I have to give them a pretty good amount of time so I can get over maybe what I would call a listening bias.
Yes.
Because they're going to be different. And then I have to use a pretty specific set of tracks so that I can get an apples to apples comparison as best as possible, because we don't have professional level, I guess, equipment for recording the differences between the different headsets.
Yeah. I mean, if we had like the, what was it? The listening ears that have the independent microphones, then, mm-hmm. you know, you can use, well, you can test headphones the same way that I was testing subwoofers when I did the subwoofer for the YouTube channel and it's being able to, and I was being able to map out the frequency bands and even tune it. Well, you can't do that with just a single microphone on a headset. So, you know, it doesn't work the same way, but that's how a lot of people test them.
So all of this story is kind of a lengthy description of basically talking about how I ended up shopping for headphones, despite the fact I had 30 pairs in my closet. And that's not an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. And how I ended up stumbling back onto Drop that I hadn't been on in a while and discovering that my favorite pair of gaming headphones still exists in a slightly new format. And you can get them in black or yellow. Now, the only thing that I will warn listeners out there about is if you're thinking that you want to get these headphones, and you absolutely should be looking at them if you want to bump up to a more audiophile level. It's got a great noise-canceling mic. We have never reviewed these on the site because I always just buy them, is usually enough of a recommend, right? When I can pull any headset out of my closet from any major manufacturer and I still buy headphones, that's a pretty great recommend. So take that with a grain of salt. But the only downside that I'll warn you about is that they are open back.
Oh, right. Yeah, Sennheiser loves the open back. And when you listen to just casual music in a quiet room, that makes absolutely no difference at all. And in some cases, it actually gives you a much wider sound stage, at least at the ear level.
Ooh, and we're talking a little audiophile here, but
right.
What we're talking about is the perceived size of the music, if you will. Open back allows more airflow that can give you maybe artificially more soundstage and more dynamic range to the sound that's being produced, where closed back, you only have so much air to work with.
Yeah, and it tends to shield external noises. So if you are in a studio environment, you want to have the closed back so that you don't have any outside influence of what it is that you are monitoring from your system.
Or if you're working around other people or trying to get your kid to sleep, you can wear the Sennheisers. But if you're on the market, I highly suggest that you get them while you can, because Sennheiser isn't making gaming headphones anymore. So these PC38X headphones may be the last generation of Sennheiser gaming headphones that we will ever see.
When I was editing the podcast, the podcast extra last month, we talked about the Tandy 1000 TX.
Oh yeah,
retro project for
the latest retro PC project.
Yeah, for Sep Tandy. And you know what's funny is I go and check YouTube and nobody's doing Sep Tandy stuff. So I'm like, well, I'm gonna be the only guy. And
you're bringing it back. Make Sep Tandy happen.
Yeah. Well, what I realized is that when we were talking about the keyboard, I was like, remind me, I have another cooler keyboard that I wanted to show you.
Oh, that's what this is. Okay.
Yeah. So I brought out, and this is in a, this was actually in a box, much like my, my printer from way back when.
Oh, wow. This thing's heavy.
Yeah. So that is what you're holding there is the IBM Model M, which has been highly regarded as a production ready mechanical keyboard from the 1980s.
Oh yeah. I've heard folks say that this is the first mass marketed, if that's even appropriate,
yeah,
mechanical keyboard ever produced.
Yeah. And all it's, right. And it lasts forever.
Oh, it's fun. It's clicky.
Yeah. Should get closer to the microphone and do that.
All right, here. I'm bringing it up because that's what the heavy keyboard reviewers do on YouTube. The horses are on the track. Okay.
It's pretty awesome.
It's a kind of an inside joke there. But yeah. Okay.
What's interesting about this keyboard is that it comes with a PS2 plug.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a coiled cable, but then there is a... what looks like an RJ45 kind of plug on the keyboard.
It's a detachable keyboard plug, even back in these days?
Yeah, so you could remove that. You got to click in the two sides.
Oh, I see. It locks in even.
And then you can replace that with the DIN version, so you can fit on a regular retro older motherboard.
Oh, IBM gets me. Replaceable cables.
Yeah, all the way back in 1985. So, but I thought that I would bring that out so that you could see it and I could actually flex that I actually have stuff and stuff. But you have been using a keyboard lately from Be Quiet.
So, yeah, I mean, this is kind of an interesting juxtaposition for me because...
this is completely opposite.
Playing with the original mechanical keyboard and then playing with the Be Quiet Dark Mount keyboard, which we'll have a review posted for... maybe by the time this goes live, I've been spending a little bit of extra time on it because I have opinions, Dennis.
Well, I would hope you do.
So let's talk about the dark mount. I just reviewed the light mount, and so that is live. You can go out and check that out. Mm-hmm. And again, look for the dark mount review, which we'll reference in the links. But the light mount and the dark mount are both made by Be Quiet, as you mentioned, but what makes them probably most interesting as a set is that they use a specific set of mechanical keys that were designed specifically for Be Quiet.
And they are silent mechanical keys. Like, they say they're tactical, but they do not feel tactical at all.
Yeah, and in fact, they use a lot of sound deadening technology that I only touched briefly on in the reviews, but we can talk about it a little bit because there's three different types of sound deadening to help keep these silly things quiet. And I guess if you have a name like Be Quiet, every reviewer is going to say, right, if you have a name like Be Quiet, you better be quiet, right? So we'll get that out of the way here so I don't have to type it into my review, but they have, there's actual sound deadening on the keys themselves, like the rubber gaskets we used to install ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then they're mounted, surface mounted, but the board itself has two additional layers of sound deadening in the PCBs and the board itself to help keep these things quiet. Yeah, and they're very low keys.
Yeah, the quick action, I think, is...
quick, I like that.
Low, yeah, fast reacting, I don't know. When I talked to Be Quiet at CES and at Computex, they were very, very proud of the keyboard design, and they pulled in a special designer to ensure that all of the latest sound deadening stuff was put in. And, you know, basically it's like a who's who of like, well, if you build the ultimate keyboard, what do you want? And then this is everything there. And
right.
That's when they built their custom keys to go with it. It's honestly kind of like touching an outer world kind of keyboard.
So there are rumors, Dennis, again, for the podcast extra,
of course,
the inside scoop, that Be Quiet bought the technology and or engineers from another really highly lauded keyboard called the Everest that used to be talked about in reverent tones on some of these custom keyboard forums.
And I want to say that's probably true.
Possibly, but I can't confirm nor deny that. But if you want to go out and look for the Everest keyboard, feel free. We probably won't link to that because we don't know.
Yeah.
But it is considered one of the pinnacles of the Mount Everest, if you will, of mechanical keyboards. And these are just as good and cheaper.
Well, it's Be Quiet because it's mass produced at this point.
So let's talk a little bit about the two keyboards very briefly. The Light Mount is a very traditional keyboard.
Yep.
It's a 101 with a couple of macro keys tacked on. Mm-hmm. It's pretty. It's great. I liked it a lot. Check out my review.
I got to type on it for a little bit and it was like, is this a mechanical keyboard? Because it, when you think mechanical keyboard, you think of, you know, like the clicky keys or the silent keys mm-hmm. or the linear switches and stuff like that. And it was completely different. And it was, like I said, out of this world.
So my Light Mount sample had the silent linear keys. Mm-hmm. And there is no question, they are the quietest mechanical keys I've ever heard or used.
Right.
Outstanding. So the Dark Mount mm-hmm. uses the Dark Mount silent tactical keys, which I expected to be different in their sound signature. And they are just as quiet.
Which is amazing. Amazing. Now, the Dark Mount has a few other additional features that make it a little unique.
That's right. So the reason I wanted to talk about the Dark Mount is it does some really interesting things that I have never had a keyboard do before. The Dark Mount is modular.
Do tell. I know what it is, but do tell.
That's right. And of course, there'll be more in the review with pictures. So we'll let you go there to actually see this in action. But what the Dark Mount does is it provides you with essentially a TKL or 10 keyless keyboard, which I love. Mm-hmm. My form factor of choice. It's about an 80 percenter, roughly. I'd have to measure it to be sure. And it will allow you to add your 10 key module using a optional plug onto the side, turning it into a full size or what we just called a 101 style mm-hmm. keyboard. But the cool thing about it, well, yep. a couple of cool things. One is it uses magnetic enclosures, hopefully
yep.
not too difficult to lose, to cover the slots. But it can be added to either the left side or the right side of your Dark Mount keyboard.
Yeah, and that was amazing.
Pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
And you can plug it in real time. You don't have to turn off your computer or anything. You just slap that puppy on there. Boom, 10 key.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a USB-C connection on both sides, so it's
makes sense.
It's a USB keyboard, so we just add a little hub in there and click and you can move things around. The cool thing I like about the 10 key is that it has 8 macro buttons at the top, similar to like the Stream Deck.
Oh, you're taking the wind right out of my sails because it's not just a 10 key. It has 8 keys on it at the top, as you mentioned, macro keys, but you didn't mention the coolest part because I beat you to it, I hope.
All right. Yep.
Those keys can be programmed. They are actually little LED screens. Mm-hmm. So if you want to change them from their default functionality, they have like lock and sleep and snip and stuff built in by default. Mm-hmm. You can have them trigger really anything that you want. Now there's a big preset section of software that's supported with their little symbols like Discord, for example, or pick your listening service for music, right? And you can put it on there, but you could also build your own.
Oh, so you could have the Hardware Asylum button.
Exactly. And you could trigger it to open that. In fact, one of the keys by default will take you to the Be Quiet Dark Mount support page, which is kind of cool.
Very nice. Very nice.
But that's not all. It's like we're selling knives on TV, right? Mm-hmm. That's not all, Dennis. If you order the Dark Mount today or yeah.
any day.
It also comes with a second modular piece that sits on top. And just like that 10 key, it has two positions also. You can put it on the left side or the right side of the keyboard mm-hmm. up above. And it has its own little screen that lets you control a bunch of preset functionality, like there's a stopwatch, the clock, sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think they call it the media dock.
Yeah, so it's basically media-based. It has a really great volume control roller mm-hmm. on it, and we all love volume control knobs, right?
Yeah.
And it has a beautiful screen of its own, and the buttons also light up. And is there some programmability there? Yes. Like all good keyboards, you can reprogram every key on it, mm-hmm. either to be part of a macro or to replace the functionality. And that's edit key. You want your Q key to not type a Q? We got you covered.
Nice.
Right? But maybe my favorite thing about both of these isn't the crazy add-ons because, you know, at the end of the day, how often are you going to change the configuration of your keyboard once you find the one you're happy with? Mm-hmm. Right? So, okay, I'm kind of on the fence about that. And it does, by the way, come with a cool add-on for the wrist rest so that your wrist rest goes all the way across. Good thinking.
Yep. Well, and they have two of them. So they have one for the 10 key and then one for the main keyboard.
Exactly. And they're magnetic. More about that in the review. Mm-hmm. But like I say, the coolest thing about it probably is that it has a gaming mode built into it.
So how is that different than the normal mode?
Well, normal mode is everything works pretty much the way it's programmed. Mm-hmm. But their gaming mode will allow you to go into the software and do the stuff that you'd normally do, like turn off the pesky Windows key.
Oh, okay.
Right? But you can, on the fly, type the function P, I want to say. Mm-hmm. I feel like you're going to have to read the review and check me on that.
Yeah.
And it will automatically turn on anything that would interrupt your game. The Windows key, the Alt tab, etc. It just disables all that stuff.
Oh, cool.
So that you don't accidentally find yourself in the middle of a firefight and, oh, there's that Windows or Cortana. How can I help you? And you can do that on the fly, which is, this is the first time I've seen it where you could do that on the fly and it isn't just the Windows key.
Yeah. Well, and maybe I don't play the games where this would actually be a problem, but I've never really had a issue hitting like the Windows key while I'm mid game or alt tabbing or adjusting the volume. But then again, I'm a first person shooter kind of guy, not necessarily an MMO where I'm like click, 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 click. And
that's right. Well, and you get the opportunity to do programmable macros, which is nice. Mm-hmm. You can program your 10 key unit to be like the ultimate macro dock if you wish.
Ooh, sweet.
And you can put it on either side for those of that use it. Every key can be programmed. You have the functionality of taking it and putting it on either side, like I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And it has really great USB that goes across both the primary keyboard, the TKL side, and that 10 key, and it looks really great.
Awesome. Well, we should be able to see that review shortly on Hardware Asylum, probably by the time that this episode is available. And of course, if you have any questions, you know how to get a hold of us. For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or subscribe to us on YouTube. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2025. Thanks for listening.